Welcome, mountain bikers. Right now, all I want to do is say, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Rob Warner, and leave it at that. But I also want to be very clear about the newfound respect I have for Rob Warner. After spending just a couple hours with him, he and I had never met before, I was really surprised, and it shouldn't be a surprise, but I was surprised to learn how much goes into what he does as a commentator that we know him most for the World Cup downhill webcasts on Red Bull TV. It's easy to think of him as, you know, the crazy drunk Rob in the booth from the Freecaster days, and he's got that legacy for sure, and that's kind of what drew a lot of us to him. But, you know, once a World Cup racer who's won downhill races, he's pursued this commentary profession very seriously, and he's worked on perfecting his craft. He's also a diehard storyteller who digs into the lives of riders and researches their stories and tells them and portrays them well. Something I also didn't know. Just a lot of the work that he does behind the scenes was really impressive to me. I'm honored to have had the chance to speak with Rob. The fact that he was randomly in SoCal and we connected, it was awesome for me, and I hope it's awesome for you in this interview. So enjoy the show. This Vital MTB Inside Line podcast is brought to you by Jensen USA. Shop for great deals and get professional advice on your favorite mountain bikes, components, and riding gear. Over 2 million happy cyclists served since 1994. Visit JensenUSA.com/theInsideLinePodcast and use code INSIDELINE for 10% off qualifying items. Maxxis Tires. Where the rubber meets the dirt, Maxxis makes no compromise tires for any rider, any trail, anytime.
So you're recording already?
Yeah, I'm recording. You always get...
You're not, are you?
Yeah, for sure.
Don't put that in.
I'll bleep that one out.
You won't put that in, will you?
Do you want me to? Okay,
no,
I'll cut it out.
No mention of anything.
What if
like
I bleep that whole thing out and then they just all hear, you won't put that in, right?
Yeah.
All right.
As long as there's no telling what it is.
Okay,
that's
fine.
Oh, no, nothing like that.
Yeah, for sure.
Sorry, dude. I didn't know you were recording. Have we started now?
Yeah, we're on. I'm gonna do an official introduction, but
okay.
I like to get a little kind of candid banter as we go. I gotta see kind of how loud you're gonna be. So, tell me your worst travel story from last year.
From last year?
Yeah.
I can tell you a good one from this year.
Okay.
From South Africa.
Okay.
Rick, my colleague, and I hope he's listening. Rick McLaughlin got that drunk that we had to carry him out of a pub. Snoring, and then the next day I had the pleasure of dragging his ass all around South Africa, having to drive to the airport with him stopping every 4 minutes for him to puke. That was the worst travel story this year, but it was great fun for me. I really enjoyed it. Yeah, it was really hot.
Someone else's suffering makes you happy.
Yeah, it was awesome.
All right.
I had a better day than him.
Good. Okay, we'll do this. Here we go. It might not be quite as pro as what you do on your job, but we're going to knock this shit out.
I ain't that pro. I've got proer.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right.
True, yeah. Yeah.
All right, welcome Vital MTBers, and thanks for tuning in to the Inside Line podcast. I'm Sean Spomer, and all I can say is, look at the mother time. I can't believe it. I'm sitting here with Rob Warner. Thank you for being on the show.
Well, thanks for getting me on.
Yeah.
It was a bit of a last-minute thing that I was, I don't know, it's just happened, didn't it?
Yeah.
And you're here at 8 o'clock this morning, you were here.
Yeah, I was up at 5. I couldn't sleep. I was waiting for this. I was so pumped.
I couldn't sleep because I got jet lag. This is the liveliest.
It worked out
this
well.
This is the liveliest you'll ever get me before 10 a.m., man. It's like, I won't go. I slept till like 7 this morning, so it's pretty good.
Good.
Which is actually about 5 o'clock in the afternoon at home.
Okay.
So I'm pretty proud of that.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, I ain't done that for a while.
Sick. Stay a little closer. Is this kind of awkward? Two grown men who just met for the first time in a hotel room? And...
Bit weird, isn't it?
Yeah. A little bit, right?
Tightened up a bit when we got in here, man. It was all right. We had breakfast at Denny's, and now we're in a sterile, cold hotel room in Temecula. Yeah, it's all right.
Good. All right, now I'm not trying to fluff up your ego, but when I realized this interview was going to happen, it was going to be a reality, I was pumped. Then I was stoked. Then I was dungy pumped. And then I got to thinking about, you know, what you've done with World Cup commentary and World Cup downhill racing, and I kind of came to the conclusion that I think you're a massive part of what World Cup downhill is today and the success of it. I'm serious.
Yeah,
so
well,
I've got this kind of written thing I got to get out of my system.
That's all right.
Because I didn't want to screw it up.
Read it out, dude.
So yeah, I think you're a huge part of what World Cup downhill is today.
Thank you. It's really nice and to hear.
Like, the racing will always be exciting regardless.
Yeah.
But I feel like without you in the booth, I don't think that the audience following, the anticipation for race day, like even the investment in the coverage, I don't think that it would be the same without what you've done.
Oh, thanks, mate.
And so, like, I've watched other races as a downhill fan, and it's always good to see the racing footage for sure, like being a fan, but a lot of times the commentary is kind of easy to tune out or even critique super hard. And I'm not trying to put down any of those commentators because
no.
I would never want that job in a million years.
No, it's probably trickier than people think it is.
I'm sure it is. But I just think what you've brought to the stage with your history and your personality, like, it's made World Cup downhill race day like a must-watch event.
God, I hope Red Bull are listening to this.
Yeah, good, yeah. Like, and I think seem like you're still a pure fan of downhill racing, and you haven't lost that touch in the booth. And so,
No, I haven't. I'm more enthusiastic about downhill racing now than when I was doing it. That's for sure. I enjoy commentating more than I ever did mountain bike racing, which probably sounds weird, but I think it's true. Like, I love commentating. I feel like it's kind of, I don't know. Yeah, it's... I've never really had a job or a career apart from mountain biking, which I didn't take very seriously. But this I take super seriously. And I've tried hard. Like, I've really, you know, because we started with Freecaster, which was just basically a massive piss up in a commentary box. I mean, it was. And it, you know, I was lucky enough to be able to learn my trade like that, I suppose.
Yeah. Can we kind of walk through that? Like, walk through the story of how you became the voice of World Cup downhill and other things now. But, like, let's go back to the beginning. I don't know that a lot of people know about the Freecaster days.
No. And,
well, we can talk about your racing career too, but
we don't have to do that one tight long. There's only one year that was any good, mate.
But, like, yeah, how did it start? Like, just give us the top
so,
to bottom.
I guess, like a lot of people that I meet now in this line of work, there a lot of people that do this are journalists, I suppose. And I was never really a journalist, but I always had a bit of a talent for writing stuff. And it's weird, like, I left school with nothing apart from one O-level in English. That was it. And then I went to college and got kicked out. Then I got a job and got kicked out of that. And like, yeah, I remember one of my reports always saying I was good at English, but basically it was a shame that I ruined anyone else's chances in the class of getting anywhere because I was, you know, like, disruptive and I was just a bit wild.
Yeah.
Fully ADHD'd out. So then I started writing a bit for Ember UK, really. I did a column for them, and then I started writing a few articles, and then they sent me to Brazil.
What year is this?
Oh, my God. This would be, well, once the wheels came off the riding career, so any time from about 98 onwards, I think. I wrote a column when I was doing all right, but then I started doing less and less well in mountain bike results.
Okay.
To keep myself in the mags and keep getting paid, I made sure I did articles, and I wrote those articles as well. I created articles all the time, and I used to go and do them. And then I got sent to Brazil to cover a Red Bull gold mine race. Do you remember they raced down a gold mine there?
Uh-huh, yep.
Rennie was there and that. Oh, my God. There's a story there. But anyway, and I did that as an MBUK kind of journo to cover it.
Okay.
And then I got interviewed on the because they were making a show for Channel 4. And then the producer said, Rob's really good on camera. Like, you should use him a bit more. Literally. And I'll tell you what year this was. This was 2006. I got a phone call saying, do you want to do X-Fighters from Red Bull? They emailed me. Would you do X-Fighters? Present it with James Cracknell, which
like
is a freestyle motocross competition.
Thing,
Oh, mate, it was like Brazil, you know, like Rio and all these mad destinations around the world. And I was done with bike racing. I was still getting paid by Giant, but I was over it. And that year, I took the job on knowing it clashed with a load of World Cups. I was just going to bullshit my way out of, have a cold or something. And then in Vigo at the first one, I was ill. I had a cough, right? A tickly cough. And I was coughing all the bloody time. And I remember buying some cough medicine and I fucking drunk a bottle of cough medicine, right? And that night I was so out of it. I sat and talked to these goldfish in a fish tank, these fish in a fish tank. And it went on and on. And then the next day was qualifying and we'd been drinking and I was sick at start and didn't qualify. And it was the first time I'd never qualified for a World Cup when it hadn't really been when it had been my fault. You know, there's plenty of mechanicals and that. And that was it. I didn't go back after that.
Really?
No, yeah. I didn't go back. I was over it. So I did this X-Fighters. And then at the last X-Fighters that year, I met a bloke called Raymond Delieu, who thought I was this big-time TV presenter. I didn't know about mountain bike. And he was like, would you like to do the mountain biking for me? I've got the rights to it, Freecaster. And I was like, yeah. And long story short, I met a bloke at the airport at Slovenia the next year. Big dude gets in the car and I'm like, so you're a TV presenter, are you? And he goes, no, you're the TV presenter. And I was like, no, I do a little bit, mate. I've only done like 5 shows ever.
Yeah.
So then we worked out that neither of us were. And it came out that Raymond didn't even know I'd been a mountain biker until I'd done a whole year of Freecaster commentary.
No way.
Yeah, he thought I was a TV host. And I, that's the truth. So, but obviously, you know, we were nervous, both of us. So I think I drank, for me, which is a lot, like 6 pints of beer before we started in Slovenia. Mm. We were both so nervous. I was like, oh, let's just get fucking drunk.
Yeah.
So we got wasted. And that's how it started, Freecaster. And then did that. And it's probably a good thing it stopped because I've never drunk so much. I got fat and we used to drink all day and all night. I went around the world with Will Ockerton, who's now the Santa Cruz boss man, and he can drink a bit. So we had a lot of fun. It was a mint time.
Yeah.
Then Red Bull got the rights and I think they were probably stuck with me a little bit. I know they wouldn't have took me on as I was, you know, screaming and shouting on there for like... So, and I remember going into Red Bull and I think they wanted to keep the core audience, so they needed... probably me. And and the boss man, when I went in, this Chris Ryan, who's a big boss there, was like, have you been trained as a commentator? And I thought I was pretty cool at the time. And I was like, no, can't be trained to be a commentator. What are you on about, mate? Like that.
Because you're just keeping it real in the booth being drunk, right?
Like, exactly. Yeah. Shouting and
like
screaming.
That's mountain biking.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly how I saw it. And then, and I'll tell you what, I had to quieten right down. They'd even searched the booth for beer before the start. And I wouldn't, it wasn't
at
like
the first, like the first time you
in Africa, mate. They come in South Africa, Peter Maritzburg. The producer from Red Bull, he came in and searched the booth for beer and found one in my, I hid it in my bag. And he was like, you can't do it without, right? And I was like, well, I'm not an alcoholic, definitely not. And I never have been, by the way. But I was like, it'll be better if you let me drink that before I start because I won't go like all stutter and shit. Yeah. It was like, it just smoothed me out. So I definitely let me down a beer. And that, and then one thing led to another, and I worked a lot with a commentary coach,
okay,
which was strange, and but very good. And here I am, I suppose, halfway to being a professional kind of sounding commentator, hopefully.
Dude, halfway, you know what I mean? Come on.
Well,
all the way
I'm getting there now, yeah. I'm getting the commentary's all right now, I feel like, yeah. It's always hard, the commentary, though, because you always want to keep it cool for the core audience. But you've got to remember that, you know, like, I don't know, off the top of my head, like 30 TV channels around the globe are probably taking that feed as well.
Mm.
So people at home on a Sunday don't want to be just, you know, hear me like...
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? So you got to remember who you're doing it to. And it's easy now. It's second nature. And hopefully it's still exciting. And it's never going to be as raw as it was for Freecast.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. You know, like, see comments once in a while, like, bring back Drunk Warner. It was the best back then. Like, have you ever gone back?
Dude, if I carried on drinking from how I was on Freecaster till now, I'd be dead anyway. So it's good, yeah.
Have you ever gone back and listened to some of those old ones, like, anytime recently?
No, I haven't. I'd love to. I would love to hear... the first Slovenian one that we did.
Yeah,
I would.
That'd be good.
Maybe I'll try and get hold of Raymond, and he must have it somewhere.
Yeah, it's gotta be online.
Great to get hold of him. Yeah, I don't think it's online. No, I don't think it's online, but he might have it somewhere.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. I don't think it's online.
When did you realize this could be something you were doing full time? Was it with the X-Fighters thing, or was it with Raymond? Like, were you able to make a living doing this back then?
Well, first year I was, because Giant was still paying me well. Yeah. Even though I only failed to qualify for one World Cup. So, yeah, they were chuffed up. That was the end of that. Yeah. No, then the year after, yeah, I made a... Because I got the World Cups as well and still did X-Fighters. Yeah. Yeah, I sort of made a living out of it. But it wasn't until I worked with Red Bull, really. I was just enjoying it till that point. Like, we were pretty savage. Even at X-Fighters, we'd always... We did a good job at X-Fighters, and I learned a huge amount at X-Fighters because I was working with a professional, like, proper TV crew, a proper presenter, Ed Lee, as well, in that second year. So I learned a lot from him, and that's how it is a bit. You know, you learn off people, and I can see how it's done. And then when Red Bull came in, it's been, I don't know how long we've been doing it with Red Bull now. It's a long time, a few years now. But we've got, we've grown as a team, like, and it's like, it's a tight core of people really that have all, and it's been a few changes, but last year we had a new live director and it sort of was the missing piece, and it all came to really from where I think where I was sat definitely, and probably where a lot of the people at Red Bull were sat as well. Last year it all came together. I finally felt like, yeah, I'm the commentary's sort of second nature now, and I'm working on the presenting as well, because you know, I host those pre and post shows, and but yeah, no, I've got so many good people around me, that's the thing. And it would never be anything like it is now without Red Bull, man. That, like, all the people that do it with me, they love it. They love mountain biking, and they're keen and enthusiastic about it, especially my boss. You know, it's not like he's been lumbered with mountain biking. In fact, I ring him up about stats. I'm like, can you remember who won? And he knows. So, yeah, it's a really good crew. Yeah, it's really good. And it's hard work. It's intense, but that's sort of the buzz of it as well.
Yeah, like, walk us through a typical race weekend. Like, what do you do from the time you land? Like, on our little, when we were at breakfast and you told me what you did, I was pretty blown away by the depth of what you do.
It's quite a lot goes on. I mean, to be honest, if it's what we call a single, it's easy. So if it's a downhill or a cross country, it's pretty easy.
Okay.
I get in on Thursday and it's, you know, and then I've only got like a men and a women's cross country or a men and a women's downhill to deal with. But when it's Saturday and a Sunday, downhill Saturday and cross country on the Sunday, then you have to really take care of, and everything has to, it's a process, it's all got to be right. So I get there on, usually on a Wednesday night or Wednesday afternoon, and if we've got time and the director's there, my director's there, I'll sit with him and we'll write the script, and that's four pre-show scripts. So it's, you know, it takes half a day really.
So you're doing the writing? Like, this is something that I had no idea you were doing when you explained it.
He'll come to me with the structure of what he wants, and like, these are the clips we're going to lead to, this is the story coming in at this race. You know, so there'll be interviews with such and such, they might do a piece on, you know, Aaron Gwynn or something like that, whatever, and then we tell the story, and then I'll write that though in my own words, and that helps me because already when I've written it, it's already slightly gone in my head, you know, and it's quite a lot of text to learn really, I suppose. I mean, it's not, you break it down anyway. That's done, and then Thursday we start to get Claudio in, Bart Brenton's in as well, and we'll start running through it and tighten it up, and then on a double over the weekend. Friday's really busy because Friday morning I'll always walk the course, so basically Friday's hectic. I'll have a script meeting probably in the morning, then I'll run off and walk the course because I always like to see the course as late as I can to the race runs. I have to be in the commentary box to do a technical rehearsal and to rehearse. I always practice a bit and get into the swing of it on their warm up on their quali runs. Yeah, I sit in there and commentate to myself for an hour sometimes.
Really, just by yourself?
I can do. Yeah. Claudio will come in and he'll be on his mic as well. And sometimes he'll go because he's busy, and I'll just sit in there and I practice a bit. Yeah, why not? I'm watching it and I take notes. And then that's more stuff to go perhaps in the pre-show, and also the pre-show at this point can completely change. So you quite often can't really tighten it down because you might be talking about Aaron, say, but he might have had a puncture or not be in the final for some, you know, so it all changes. So then, yeah, Friday night we have more script meetings, finalise the script, and then I have to get all my info that I've sort of took over the last few days from course walk, chatting to people, and then until the start list comes out on Friday night, I don't know who the hell's in the final. So then I can go to work once that start list published at about 5. So, and I always try and be finished by like, ideally 8-9 o'clock at night. I don't want to work
on Friday night or the night before the race.
And then the morning, next morning, we'll be on what they call the studio for like 10 to pre-record those pre-shows, and then straight in the commentary. That one's done. Straight out, post shows are live, and live is becoming easier and actually quite good fun now.
Yeah,
I'm starting to get my head around it. Yeah, all these things with telly, it just takes. You can't. It's an experience you can't get unless you're doing it live, really. So, you know what I mean? I think it takes a while to kind of get your head around it.
But, yeah.
You know, there's no substitute for actually doing it, is what I'm saying.
Right.
And then Sunday I get up and it's much the same process. Saturday night, I've been pretty knackered after all that as well. You know, it's like 2 hours commentary and two pre-shows, half hour and two post. And then Sunday is 4 hours commentary on two cross-country races and another two pre-shows. And yeah, so I rely heavily on Bart Brenchens. He's my expert in that, and he's knows. He is like, He knows what most of the riders had for breakfast. Like, he's incredible. Huh. So that takes a lot of the pressure off. So, you know, and the cross country, to me, is an easier commentary.
I was going to say, is one harder than the other?
Yeah, probably.
Different pace, maybe, on the
exactly. X-ray? The downhill one's intense. It's times, it's riders. You see the same riders perhaps seven times a year, so you have to be careful not to try and repeat what you say. So I've learned over the years to try and stay more with the action on screen rather than keep coming out with stats from the past, which I used to do. You know, drop less in now, and like, we're getting better and better with it all the time. I feel anyway. Yeah. People at home might disagree. And then the XC's, you tell it as a story. It unfolds in front of you. Mm. So, you know, it probably is. It's a slightly slower pace. It's downhill's good. You get a structure. Like, I'll come over the line, I'll try and get out. Claudio comes in for the slow-mos. I'm reading the notes for the next rider. Boom, they're in the gate. As soon as I hear Claudio stop talking, I'll look up at the screen and I'll be like, right, in the gate now, such and such. And then straight into that one. Yeah. It's
complicated.
Well, then you've got people in your ears.
It seems so natural when you guys are on there. Like, it seems really well run. And it's impressive to see how much complication there is.
It's like anything, though. You make a cock up and you feel your heart rate go to like 180. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then it'll take 10 minutes to kind of really get back in the groove.
Yeah.
Yeah, quite often I'll sit in there and I'll be like, right, focus, for God's sake, focus, concentrate now. It's like that sometimes. I mean, it's a long time. Not always.
Yeah, do you kind of have a rhythm? Because it seems like you sort of, it's not the kind of necessarily the fastest racers going first in the feed, but it seems like you start out at a pretty good pace and you sort of ramp yourself
up
to the end.
Yeah, you should naturally.
Are you conscious
anyway
of that?
No. I'll tell you what it is, right? We start, and I always... Well, until quite recently, I always felt like it was always a bit stuttery in that. But that's gone now.
Last
few years. Yeah, practice, confidence, like, no problem. Yep. I'm straight in now like a pro, I suppose. But then, of course, you don't want to blow your nut on the first 20. You've got to wait for the last five guys, hopefully, where the wind's going to come from. But also, if you see a run that's fast, that like it could win, if it's one of the first dudes down, then you've got to go for it a bit as well. But generally, it's genuine. Like, it's, you know, like, fuck me, look at this dude going. And when you get to the last five, of course it is. I'm a fan. I go mad. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. It's exciting. I love watching it. Yeah. And the hardest thing now almost is remembering that, like, in freecaster days, I used to just be, like, drunk and shouting, like, ah, God. And now, of course, I have to curb my enthusiasm and remember that I'm doing a job and relay what a commentator would rather than being a fan. Don't be a fan is a big, big thing, really.
Yeah, like, you have to bring it to the less educated people or something, like you said, like the going to the TV stations.
Oh, yeah, you got to remember that. That's the thing. Yeah, you're catering for the core. I mean, I guess they know their stuff as well, but you're also, yeah, that's right. And let's not forget here that with Freecaster, that was never going to go anywhere with that commentary.
Mm.
It wasn't, not mainstream. It would have probably stayed in the core fans would have loved it forever, maybe. But like now, and you can see it in mountain biking again, Red Bull, and it is them. I ain't saying it because I work for them, but look what they've done. They've done a fantastic job. And being part of it, I can see how hard they'll work. And like, I think everyone's reaping the rewards and the whole sport's better. Of course it is. I raced in the mid-90s, man, when Eurosport were doing it. It was massive. It was on Eurosport every Sunday or Saturday, whatever. And it was always my goal, was only goal to get in that live feed, which is probably like now. And then
Your riders say that all the time.
Yeah.
Like, I just want to get in the feed.
That's right, of course. Well, this sort of job done, isn't it, to a point, for sponsors. And then when Eurosport stopped showing it, I mean, it was like someone turned the lights out on mountain biking.
Yeah.
And I probably not a lot of people remember it, really. It was a while ago now, but late 90s, end of it, when Palmer quit, I mean, everyone was like, all the money left for Palmer, but it was more than that. It was the TV left.
Hmm.
And it went from big trucks like we got now to sprinter vans overnight. And that was, you know, that stayed until 2005, 2006 when I quit. I was absolutely done with it. There was no fans and it was like, or less, and it didn't hold its appeal to me.
Yeah,
I just kept doing it for money.
Okay,
and I've, you know, no problem with doing that. But that's what it was. It really became a proper job. Like, just
And you think there's some wind back in the sails? Like, it's the scene in general is.
Oh yeah, it's buzzing again. The fans. There's loads of people. It's huge. It's huge again. Yeah. And to be honest, like, you know, with it being covered as it is, I can't think of many things that lend themselves better to watching on telly than downhill mountain biking, really, because it builds and builds, and very often, or hopefully, you know, the last dude down is going to be the dude that, that wins or pushes for the win, you know? And it's, so it builds nicely to that pinnacle. Yeah, it's probably a dream, really, to commentate on in that respect. Yeah, cool. Yeah.
Let's talk about co-hosts for a little bit. Like, Claudio's a staple now, but he wasn't always. Like, kind of, who's been in the booth with you? I know Nigel has. Like,
Heidi was with me for a long time, wasn't he? Yeah, we did a lot together.
Stick hopped in there for one or two, didn't he?
Stick had a go, mate. Yeah, upset everyone in the whole world of mountain biking. he did Schladming with me 1 year.
Okay.
He did Schladming with me, yeah, he did. And he was good, yeah. And then, and Pagey, yeah, he did a lot. We did the Worlds with Danny Art. I mean, that run blew up massive. So,
Is the dynamic with the co-host, is that something hard to figure out? Because I kind of...
It's, yeah, you'd be lucky to be thrown in a commentary booth with someone for the first time and nail it. Yeah. It might sound all right the other end, but it wouldn't feel good where I'm sat. You wouldn't have that flow, really. Now, it takes people a while to get used to it as well. I can manage people because I do so much of it now quite well. But, like, yeah, it's always going to be different, I think. Yeah,
okay,
yeah, yeah.
I remember a couple times in the past that it seemed like, I don't remember if it was Nigel, if it was Stick, but just, it's almost like they tried to match your excitement and your intensity, and it almost didn't seem like it worked, but it seems like there's a pretty good balance with Claudio right now. Like,
yeah. Well, that's a good thing. See, now, the worst thing you can have in commentary, and it happens all the time, is competitiveness. Like, when you're fighting for airspace with someone, it's bollocks. And that's always how it is, actually, unless you're dealing with a pro. And Claudio is a pro, like, in that respect. He shuts up, he sits back, and, you know, and lets me rant. And, you know, like, I do call the shots on the times and the finish line, so I get all the good stuff. Like, you know, that's it. That's the skill, really. And that, it ain't about, you've got to remember, it ain't about you two in the commentary booth. It's people at home are listening. Like, two people talking at the same time, all these things, they sound terrible. And, of course, they were all the things I did for Freecaster all that time. Yeah. We were fucking miles off. But people liked it because it was raw and exciting. But,
sure.
Yeah, no, we've moved on from that now. Yeah, hopefully, yeah.
Okay.
And hopefully it's still exciting, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I think it is. Do you ever, I'm not trying to throw you under the bus here, but do you ever feel like Claudio's too critical? is that too personal?
I hear it a lot, mate. Yeah, yeah. I tell you what, he don't give Brendan enough stick. That's my biggest gripe with it. He really needs to get on Brendan a bit more. God, he gives him so much shit in the commentary box. I hear that he's negative, right? I do hear it. I won't lie, but I think he's, for me, he says what he sees, and he says it truthfully, and he says, like, he doesn't look quick through this section. And yeah, if I was a rider, I'd be pissed, because when I was riding, a bloke said about me at the climb in Capron, he said, it looks like Warner's been on the fags and booze too much this weekend, right? I remember it went out live on Eurosport. My mum was listening, and I was like, oh my God. But, like, and I took real offence to it, and it is, but if I see a rider now and they say to me, they do say it to me, and I'd be like, look, how boring would it be if we both sat there and blew smoke up every rider's off? Like, try and forget this personal relationship. Remember, like, we're doing a commentary here for people, and it's like, if he thinks you look slow through that section, or I do, and we say it, then, like, that's our opinion. And even if it's wrong, it is an opinion. And
the splits will show up and prove it
right.
Wrong, right?
And it's commentary, and it, like... Yeah, don't get hung up on it, man. We can't. We know the trouble is, you know, we're friendly with most of the riders, I suppose, and that's so you don't want to be like sort of going, he looks crap here, but you know, yeah, Claudio says it as it is, and yeah, I think he's good. I think he's great for it. Yeah, I like that. That's what I like about him is that he's critical, actually, and I think it's his job as an expert.
Yep,
that is correct to be like that. Yeah.
Cool.
He don't care. He says it as he sees it, and that, for me, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't mind if the people at home don't agree or disagree or agree or whatever. That's at least he's stirring them up, and they're like, you know, it's good. Yeah.
And so, he's ridden the course. He's been out there like with the riders.
And
like,
he was, you know, he was a World Cup racer for a long, long time. Yeah.
Is it?
He knows his stuff.
Is it less glamorous in the booth than we might think?
I would imagine.
There's been a photo or two, and I don't know if it was Freecaster or Red Bull days, but. There's one photo I think Sven sent over, and it was you in the booth, shirt off, just like sweating.
Oh, yeah.
Miserable. Like, is it?
Yeah, you can be.
Can it still be that way? Because
I do actually put my foot down now and say I need aircon. Yeah. Getting a bit of a diva in there, yeah. Yeah, I think it's actually written into the contract that, not from me, between UCR, Red Bull or whatever in the organiser, they need to put an aircon unit in.
Yeah.
But sometimes the aircon units will be loud, so you can't have them on. And, you know, there's things like that. It's a lot more, there's always something goes wrong, always. Yeah. But, yeah, the trouble with getting hot is, I don't mind getting all sweaty, but you get tired. Like when it's muggy, like you're sweating and hot and you get tired and you don't want to be tired. You want to be like sharp and crisp and like boom. So that's why I'm funny about made it a bit better perhaps like that. Yeah. But if you came in one of our commentary booths, no, they're not. They're just a little box. There ain't nothing cool about them. No.
Some microphones. Yeah.
Normally I've worked out of waffle hearts, out of sort of hot dog looking van things. Yeah. Yeah. We do all sorts. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What's kind of the worst possible thing you could have happen on race day with commentary times, technical glitches?
Dead air is the worst.
Yeah, like you mentioned, like something screws up and your heart rate goes up.
Like, yeah, the worst thing's when you've got to fill, like what I call dead air, you know, like, so someone got hurt, sadly or unfortunately, and then they got like a 45 minute or an hour course hold. Well, they sort of might keep flicking back to a bloke laid on the ground with a load of medics around him, and then you know the rest of it, they're showing trees and things like that. Yeah that can be quite testing. That's the worst bit for sure. When it goes to plan and it runs as it should from one rider to the next, then you can really get into it. But things that, and like you said about a rhythm, yeah, you do find a rhythm, like you do get into a, and it takes a few riders to get that, but that comes a lot quicker than it ever did. But yeah it breaks all that really. Yeah, I mean, I don't care now. I feel I'm so comfortable. I've done that much of it now. I could sit and talk about that wall, that white wall there for an hour probably. It wouldn't be interesting, but I'd get through it. You know what I mean?
Go.
Yeah. Well, it's got a nice texture. Looks like, yeah.
Do you have any nightmare stories from the booth that like people may not have noticed or like caught on to, or maybe they covered well?
We've had a few. I mean, there was a cross country in Mont Saint-Anne, and we were in our commentary box. And they didn't move it from the downhill to the cross country finish. So
how far away were they? Like,
oh, it's quite like the downhill finish is a little bit up the hill.
Yep.
And you know, they just didn't move it. There was no need, because once I'm in a commentary box, I don't need to see out the window.
Because you're just watching the screen.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. If you start looking out the window, remember, and start commentating on what you see out the window, people at home ain't seeing it. So you got, I have done it in the past. You know, yeah. You got to be a bit careful.
Yep.
But someone unplugged us, because I think they thought we were done the day before. They literally unplugged us. But for some reason, so all the screens went down, but the headphones still worked, and you could still hear me. So I was like on the button. And the truck could hear me. I was on the button. I was like, we got no picture. And they were like, what? I was like, the picture's just completely gone. We got nothing.
Does the button cut you off from the live feed?
Yes, so
you
can talk to the control? Yeah, I use it a lot. Okay. I talk to the truck all the way through.
Yep.
All the way.
Yeah, I know. After the story, go into some of how that works with talking in your ear. Like, that's baffling to me.
Now you get in. It's just one of them. You just get more, all these things, you just practice. You just get better. But anyway, and then my boss was like, Chris was like, oh God, right, okay, hang on. And then, like 5 seconds passed, and he was like, Shouter overtakes on the left. And then I was like, in my ear, and then I was like, well, Shouter making a move there on the left, without being able to see anything. And so then he was, because they had pictures in the truck, so he was relaying and sort of telling me what was going on. And then he'd be like, well, he's put about 3 bike lengths in a Calavi here, and I'd be like, so Calavi dropping back now? Yeah! And then someone texted me and was like, what happened? And that commentary got real weird in the middle. Yeah, we got away with it.
Yeah, that's a good cover, though.
Yeah, we do things. There ain't nothing like live telly, because it's tits up and you're on air. So
yeah.
It's fun. It's funny.
Yeah, and so talk about that. You've got someone in your ear talking. You've got a button to press to take you off air.
Yeah, my button to the truck takes me off air. Yeah,
yeah.
Cough button, or whatever. Well, no, it's the I have a button to the director. I have a button to I guess you'd call him the exec director, who would probably be more who I would fire questions, research questions to, and then he will, if need be, and very often or most times, he will have an email Skype chat open with Martin Whiteley, and
no
they will.
Way.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
Martin's
yeah.
like the. kind of the go-to almost on the fly.
Yeah,
like,
because there ain't no one knows as much about him about mountain bike. Yeah, he's exactly. That's right. Yeah. He works with us. He gives us stat sheets before, which are invaluable. And then during a race, like, he will be in contact with Chris and, you know, like, say, well, a Czech rider didn't win in the last 7 years, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And that comes through more in XC, actually, because the racing change. I mean, here's an example that we missed, and it was a gutter. But in South Africa a couple of weeks ago, Sam Gaze won. Now, I didn't know, because I'm busy focusing on things in the commentary box. I didn't sort of think, you just miss it, that he was the first, but we missed it. He was the first ever rider from New Zealand to win a cross-country World Cup.
Oh, man.
And yeah, so sorry to Sam for that. We put it right in the highlight show. But Martin actually had been texting me, and being a good boy, I wasn't using my phone during the broadcast. and you know, we were in South Africa, and he just couldn't get hold of anyone. So that was a shame. But you know, yeah, it's right. It's a, you know, again, people at home ain't gonna miss it. But it's just one of the things that we feel we should have in there. Yeah, we've got pretty high values nowadays. You know what I mean?
So, yeah, sounds like it.
But yeah, but no, yeah, we work. It's all like that. Yeah, it all goes on air. Yeah, I chat away to him in the thing. Yeah. I can get quite cross.
That's crazy. When
those goddamn times are wrong again. You know. Yeah.
And you can pay attention to it all. When you first got dropped into the booth with Red Bull, was it kind of more complex than it was with Freecaster? Or were you doing that stuff with Freecaster too? Because
I didn't know that. No, so that in Freecaster probably be nothing in my ears much coming through.
Okay.
And then with Red Bull, they would talk to me, but I never spoke back to the truck. I just listened. But they spoke to me a lot. Of course they do. They're like, interview in 5, 4. It's all like that. So you're like, well, let's go down now to Rick. And you sort of slow it down to make it fit or whatever, speed it up. But like, but then when I went to see the commentary coach that Red Bull sent me to see, he was like, why don't you find these things out or something? And I was like, what do you mean? He goes, well, talk to the truck. And I was like, well, I can't bother the truck. He was like, you what? You don't talk to the truck in like the sort of control truck thing. And I was like, no. And he was like, what are you doing? You should be on to them all the way through a show, asking them what's up. You're the boss. You need to know. You're the commentator. You need to know. So yeah, and then I now have full conversations all the time.
Yeah.
So Claudio, he'll be talking, and I might make a hand like Pac-Man sign with my fingers, which means to him like keep talking, and then he'll see me, and I'll on purpose usually turn away from him so he knows not to try and engage with me, and I'm like, and I'll be on at the truck like, yeah, so what's going on here? Yeah, it's cool. Yeah,
that's awesome. What are some of the things that coach taught you? Because you thought you kind of had it in the, you know, you were pretty dialed.
I thought I was a bollocks. Yeah. Oh, everything, mate, from not talking all the way through it, from honestly, it blew my mind. It was difficult and I hated it. And he's actually, the guy I went to see is called, he's a football, famous football coach called Gary Bloom. He does like big Olympic football and the FA Cup and all this sort of stuff, Premier, whatever, I don't even know about football. But he does all those things. And I was like, well, he's miles off. He doesn't know about extreme sports. Like, football dude telling me to like leave a pause of 10 seconds. What's he on about? 10 seconds dead air. But when you listen to it back and I've took it all on board, it's so much better. Do you know what? In the end, I couldn't get it right. I couldn't get how to commentate like they wanted me to, right? Like, I couldn't get the pauses, I couldn't get the mellower tone, but leaving gaps was a big thing, you know, because if two people talk all the way through, it does you nut. And I do talk a lot, as you can probably tell, so it's unnatural for me to let anyone else talk or pause. But Red Bull flew him to Lord, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago, and he had a direct button to my headphones, so I had the truck in my ears. And I had Gary in my ear, and he was going, Rob, stop talking. And I'd be like, and then I'd have to sit quietly. And then he'd be like, wait till the split. And I'd be like, and it'd be silence for 3, 4, 5 seconds. And then
did that feel like an eternity to you?
More than an eternity. and then I would be like, and then the split had come. And I, you know, to be honest, if Red Bull took the time to take him there, it was the most nervous I ever was for a commentary, because I knew, I was in his hands. And I decided to be completely in his hands and do it. So if he told me not to talk, I wouldn't talk. I was gonna, you know, I was like, let's do this as it's supposed to be and see what it's like. And then the split had come, and I'd be like, and he's two up or whatever, you know. And that gap actually gives gives what then you next say more, yeah, anticipation, like anticipation, yeah, and all those things. And I, even afterwards, I was like, I remember being quite depressed about it. And then I got home and watched it, and my mate, Bertie, I said, fucking commentary was shit on it. And he goes, what? No, it was mint. I goes, what, you didn't notice all them gaps? He goes, what gaps are you on about? And I watched it back, and it was all so natural, and it sounded so much better. And that was the turning point for me. That, and it literally, they literally had to get a dude there to tell me when to start talking and when to stop talking.
No way.
Yeah, yeah, I don't mind admitting it. It's true.
Yeah, but yeah, that's not the case anymore.
No. I'm okay. Completely... No, it was only one race.
Okay.
But I'd probably spent a year not... I probably had two or three, four meetings with him, all uncomfortable meetings. He's also a psychologist, right? Yeah, yeah, man. I always felt like I had to lie on the old couch at his house. It was all, yeah, it was a bit, I found it incredibly uncomfortable. But like, you know, it wouldn't have worked. I don't think I'd have ever really grasped it without that. And then when I went home, watched it back, then I was fully convinced. I was like, that actually does sound better. Yeah, and it's actually loads easier for me because I got time to think about what I'm saying. And that's the big thing. And at home, no. If I want to have a chat with Claudio now, I'll let 10 seconds. If we've got something to talk about, I'll mute us and I'll be like, and we'll just chat for 10 seconds without even looking at the screen. If it's important, you know, sometimes, and really sort something out and then, right, back on, let's do this. You know, it's like that, yeah.
Gnarly.
Yeah,
What's an example of something that would be important you had to sort out in the middle of a show?
That's a tricky one.
Is it stuff you don't really want to talk about?
No, I talk about it. It's just stuff I can't think of, really.
Okay.
It might be something like, it could be something like I've seen on that I don't agree with, or perhaps a timing screen didn't tally up with a graphic on screen. You know, that these are bad examples, but things like that, really. Okay. Yeah. No, never. It's never. No, no. I never tally him off or anything, if that's what you mean. Like, it's never.
No,
like,
I didn't think that.
No. It's not nothing like that or anything like that. No. I mean, no. Never like that. No. It's more. It'd be more technical stuff.
Technical
really.
Stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Usually. Yeah.
All right.
But I'm not making any secret. I just literally can't think of any examples. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how do you research and come up with your one-liners? Because it seemed like, and maybe, I don't know if it's as much anymore, but it seemed like there was a race or two where it's just like, all right, the new one's coming out. And like, you'd be so stoked to get this one-liner out. And then everyone, of course,
I miss them,
like,
I do a bit. I really miss them a bit, you know.
Are you not doing them at all anymore?
I do them a bit, but... Nowadays, they do need to be so politically correct. And obviously, the ones that were really funny, I always thought, were the ones that were miles off being politically correct.
Yeah, a little racier, yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah, racy ain't the word. I mean, if that free cut, they did that app, didn't they, on the iPhone and that with a lot of them. And it was like, he looks like he's got a face like he shit a Lego Death Star. You know what I mean?
Like, where does that come from?
God knows. I used to just think him up. But you ain't gonna get away with that these days, you know. No. I do. I used to really sit and think them up. I used to watch the news and think and make them up watching the news.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Now, I mean, it'd be easy, wouldn't it, to do ones like Trump or, you know, he's gone off like a North Korean rocket. I mean, but I can't do them, but they're there.
Yeah.
They are there. Yeah. Yeah. So, unless they're really good, I won't do them. So I probably tend to do them less these days, of course.
Right.
Yeah. So I need to throw a few more look at the times. I barely remembered that one last year.
That's the best one of all time.
Yeah, I nicked that from Peter Graves, of course. You know that, don't you? That's not mine.
No, I don't. Go into that then.
Would you remember? It's Peter, isn't it? Peter Graves, wasn't it? He was the live host when I was racing all the time. The American dude, the announcer.
That was kind of before my time, just barely.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, he was amazing. And he'd be like, look at the time! and me, Stick, and a load of people in the evenings, we always used to, you know.
That was your inside
joke. Yeah, we were all like, look at the time! You know, and then I nicked it. So it's his. I owe it totally to him, mate. Yeah,
there you
go.
Has he ever tried to call you out? Have you ever had anyone say it?
I don't think he'd mind. No, I think I've even gone and said it to him, actually. Because he has announced when I've been commentating and I've told him I've nicked his stuff. Yeah, he's great, mate. He's a lovely bloke.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Are there are the demands on your time growing at each race? Or are you just able to focus on the broadcast? Like, it sounds, you mentioned like there's more live stuff, but is it...
Yeah, I feel like it probably does grow a bit, but it's all right because I've grown with it. That's the thing.
Yep.
Yeah, no, it's fine. That's the whole thing, though. I have grown with it. And if I hadn't, I couldn't do it as I do it.
Yeah.
I think it would be probably quite hard for someone who wasn't a mountain biker to come in, host a pre-show, because the pre-show requires a lot of work and it gives you less time for commentating. Now, if I was just a commentator, I could put a lot more work into the commentary. Or not a lot more, but I'd put a bit more into it.
Yep.
But I don't think it lacks saying that. You know what I mean? All the facts are there. I keep an eye on everything. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you can get so much off social media, like, oh, such and such, I crashed in the rocks, I broke my little finger. And, you know, so yep. The next day I'm like, well, riding with an injured foot. I mean, it's not rocket science. It's just taking
care
of it.
You've got to find the time to do that. Like, you've got to
have a system. I've got a system. Everything, it's not hard. I just check it. Anything I read, speak to, anyone, anything goes in my phone. And then when I know what 25 riders I'm dealing with for a downhill, I will then go in my phone and write those notes on my notes for them for the next day.
So like handwritten notes to have?
No, they're typed and then I handwrite the latest news on them.
Yep.
I take them typed because trying to find a printer that works at a World Cup can take half a day. Well, Red Bull take the road now, but it used to. It's all time management. You've got to be efficient with your time. That's all. It's a lot, yeah. But yeah. Like we did, so we went to South Africa the other day and for the first time we did a live half-hour panel show. Like where we had guests, and we're going to do the same in Croatia. Now, I was pretty stressed about it because it was live. And I was like, So I put probably all day Thursday, I worked on it, you know.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it. It's fine. I like the new challenge. And actually, it didn't feel good, but when I watched it back, it was all right. Mm. And I know that Croatia, I don't know, but fingers crossed, it'll be better, you know. We all learnt from it and it'll be a lot better, you know. Yeah, yeah, so... Yeah, it's good. No, it's exciting. I love it. I love it, dude. I love all this new stuff. No, I don't mind. I'm there at work. I like working. I've shied away from work my whole life. I worked in a factory when I was 16.
Yeah.
Or 17 when I got kicked out of school and college. Dad made me get a job on a production line at Rover, bloody putting wiring harnesses in Rover 800s from 7:15 a.m. till 4:15 p.m. every day, doing the exact same job on a moving production line every 2 minutes, right? Like, jumping in the back of a car, putting a harness in, like an electrical harness, and then ka-chung, ka-chung with a bloody pop rivet gun, and then then literally walk to the next car 10 feet down the line, see what it is, go and get the correct tire. That's what I did. So fuck me, man. I ain't never
wanted to work. You learn right away, like, done.
Done.
I'm not doing that again.
And then I was doing motorcycle trials and I bought myself a new bike. And the day I bought that new bike, I quit work. And the old man had to deal with it. And I started doing bike repairs from his shed.
Huh.
So I could ride my motorbike all day, every day, which is what I did because I did motorcycle trials. That's what I... do, and that's what I do now, and I love it, you know?
Yeah, I always see you and Petey have
At it. Petey is, we have good, we love the trials, man.
That's awesome.
So that was it, yeah. So, but this, I don't know, I like using brain. I'm not very good with my hands, so it's good for me, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
yeah, let's get into the racing, kind of then versus now. Like, sprinkle us with some of your history.
Your
race history.
Oh, my race. Well, that
wasn't
so
like
long.
Years you were pro, career highlights, teams, like memories. Memories could probably go on for hours.
Yeah, we won't get into that. But I started in 93 at Worlds. I rode a bit. I got sponsored by Saracen. I got a helmet and a bike. I'll never forget getting this Met helmet, man. I was so pumped with it. Can you imagine what it would have looked like now? and then I got taken. I went to Worlds in 93 and got 19th. And that was my first... second ever mountain bike race. I did the nationals that year, and then I went to that. Well, my chain dropped out the gate. Otherwise, I probably would have been top 10. Honestly, I was on this hardtail Saracen bloody bike, and it did. I've got the video at home. It fucking come off the chain. I was gutted.
Mm.
And anyway, 19th wasn't that good, but 20th was the Tomac. so that was mint because the mags made a big deal on it. And then MBUK took me on, and I got $4,000 in 94 to go around the world on. And I did. I went to Canada. And in Canada, which was... So I went to Cap Die with a broken shoulder blade. I did shooting dirt with Jason McCrory and everyone. Mm-hmm. I broke my shoulder blade. And then I did Mont St. Anne, and I qualified eighth. Not sorry. I did Cap Die and qualified about eighth in 94. Then got a puncher in the final. Then I crashed in Germany the week after in Hinterlang and re-damaged my shoulder. Mm. And Petey, as I remember, fucking... I just remember how fast he was. I think his chain came off or something. He was still, like, right there. Petey, right then, had this phenomenal speed. And I remember thinking at the time... because I used to beat him a bit back then, and I was thinking... oh, man, as soon as he sorts out how to get to the bottom of the hill, he's going to be unstoppable. Yeah. And he was. And then 94, I did that. And then I came back from Mont St. Anne. I got third, which was my second World Cup. So that was pretty good. Yeah, yeah, I mean, it was different back then. But no, it was still pros. Benacay won it and what have you. And Gachet was there, I think. And then And then I got 95, I rode for the Saracen Cause team. So I was on MBUK GT then, and then that was sick, dude, at the Meta BF Worlds. I've confused myself. But anyway, yeah, anyway, then 95, I rode for Saracen. We didn't get paid because it was dodgy Donald in charge of everything. And then, yeah, that was a bad year. I had panic attacks and all sorts.
Really?
Yeah, I had to get the doctor out, mate, in the middle of the
day. Because of finances?
Yeah, because we were so stressed out. Fucking Pete, you'd finish a run or I'd finish a run. They'd take the brakes off the bikes and switch them to another one. And I must say, this has got nothing whatsoever to do with the Saracen brand these days. This is a completely, absolutely, they just bought the name Madison and have used it. So it's no bearing on them. It was 20 odd years ago. But yeah, so that put a bad taste in our mouths and we were out of control, mate.
Mm.
We were out of control that year. And then I rode for Saracen Giant in 96, and that was where I stayed until 2006.
Yeah. So 10 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. All right. The story of you and Petey rolling the rental car, crossing the borders, all that stuff that was, you know,
you mean
that
the
animated
Maryland, the Maryland story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, how many stories are like that you guys have?
Loads. Hundreds. Are you kidding? Really? Like, see, we thought we were, because Palm come along, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a whole new chapter of partying, another level. So that we got into it. Yeah. It was like I embraced it with both hands because I wasn't that bothered about the racing half the time. So, yeah, it was great. We had a great time, mate. Yeah, going around in that bloody big chrome bus of his was probably some of the best times I've ever had in life. So, yeah, I had a good time.
I was going to say, is there a period, like, in your racing career that you kind of just, your default memory goes to?
Well, if you're talking about success, I was 96 and 97 were the only 2 years I was really good, really.
Yeah, but like for good times, like the ones you look back on the most
fondly. Oh,
all of
it, really. Yeah. The whole time I was with Palmer.
Hmm.
The whole time he was racing and we were hanging out, that was the best time. Yeah, because it was me, him, Petey, Randy Lawrence, Voorhees. I mean, fuck me, And then I was teammates with Miles Rockwell. And yeah, I had the best time. Yeah, Sean McCarroll as well. I mean, We had a wire. He raced in Crankworx at the weekend.
Yeah,
so he was like in the top 20 or something. He must be like 40 odd. But yeah, we had a good time. Yeah, they were the best times, and we had a right laugh, mate. And poor old Giant, the team manager was Johan Lammerts, and he'd come straight from the Tour de France. He was a Tour de France rider. He won a stage, and he was Greg LeMond's domestique.
No way.
And then he had to deal with me.
And
like these downers, mate. Can you imagine him dealing with me and Miles? Oh, my God. He had no idea what had hit him. He had no idea how to control us or anything. Yeah.
Would he just kind of leave you alone? Like,
No, not really. No, there was... Me and Miles got fired, didn't we, by Giant. They made a big thing of it and all. It was. We were lucky to really have a career after that. But
what was it?
That
how did that sit with you?
What, getting fired?
Yeah, just that whole...
Well, I tell you what happened. They put a film crew out to do a video with us, a techniques video, and I wouldn't do it because I wasn't getting paid extra for it.
Mm-hmm.
I was always a bit like that with money. Probably still am. And
you were just getting paid to race. This was supposed to be something they wanted
to
do.
Well, we're going
to
sell it in WH Smiths. And I was like, if it's going in WH Smiths, where's my cut?
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, well, we've done this deal and you've got to do it. And I was like, well, I ain't doing it. And then in San Fran, out came about six dudes with cameras and fucking knows what to make this video. And me and Miles were like, fuck this. I went in San Fran shopping for 3 days. And when I came back, Johan at the hotel waited for me. And as he heard me go in my room, he followed me in my room.
No way.
And he took the bikes first. He was like, it's not good what you've done. And, you don't ride for Giant anymore. And I was like, what? And he goes, yep, I'm going to take all your equipment. Took all the bikes, took every Giant t-shirt out of my... I had to give everything with Giant on it back. Yeah, it was fun. It was funny. And then he got me and Miles stood in front of us to formally dismiss us. And Miles, I remember, laughed and went, you're going to look pretty fucking stupid without your best two riders or something. And I nearly started crying because I was like, what have I done? I've just lost a load of money.
Yeah, yeah.
And I nearly started bawling. Yeah. There was a few occasions like that. And Jürgen Benneke, who, I don't think he'd mind me saying it was so long ago, but he fucking twisted a bollock, right? And he had to have surgery to fix it. And he came out for the photos on this team launch video shoot thing. And he wasn't supposed to ride. Because me and Miles had cleared off, like his balls had swollen up to about eight times their normal size. And he, like, obviously he couldn't risked happening. Anyway, he did this video for him because he felt so bad they'd come out and they weren't anyone. And
the whole because you guys ditched it, he had to cover for you.
And the whole techniques video is him riding bow-legged, man. Honestly, yeah, because of his bald beard so small. Oh my god, there's a bit where he comes downhill and goes over a log. It's like fucking John Wayne on a push bike, like he's on a horse, mate. Poor sod, yeah.
Oh my god,
yeah, I got fired a few times, really. Yeah, we had a few. But I used to get flown to Holland all the time. They'd fly me in, meet me at the airport, bollock me, and I'd get on a flight and go back.
No way.
Yeah, it's really funny.
But it obviously hasn't hurt what you're doing. I mean, do you ever look back and regret that stuff?
No. Do it
okay.
All again. No, not at all. No, that was it. I made, it didn't sit well with me that I had to go mountain bike race. I resented it towards the end. I didn't like it. It was a lot of pressure. And, I just didn't deal with the pressure very well, really. Yeah. No, I didn't. But, I had my days. And when I was on, I was on. I could be as good as anyone, really, at that point. But it just didn't happen very often. I ain't got the head for it, and that was that, really. Yeah. But, yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I came from motorbikes, and I'm a bit weird. I always loved motorbikes. And the fact that I wasn't riding motorbikes, but I was making all this money mountain biking and spending it all on a failed motocross career that broke about every bone in my body. But that's all I wanted to do, really. And I see it now. There's a lot of riders the same of it.
Yeah, it's still that way for
sure. Of course it is.
How, you doing good? Down to keep going?
Keep going, dude. Yeah, okay, enjoy myself.
Yeah,
making
sure you don't need a break or anything.
No,
there's more. How do you feel World Cup today compares to what you were doing back then?
It's definitely a lot faster, a lot. I'd say the biggest thing, right, and it's hard, isn't it? You think like, was it easier back then or was it harder? And of course, I'd say it was a lot harder back in the 90s.
Because of the bikes?
No, I meant to do well. Exactly. I don't know. I don't think it was. No, I'm joking. But
there were some deep fields back then, weren't there?
There was. I wouldn't know how to compare it, really. I mean, it was because the bikes were shit in the mid-90s, but it was still a massively professional, maybe even more, like the money that riders earned then was, it's only coming back now, I'd say, really. Mm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, Palm was making $1 million a year, wasn't he, back then in the mid-90s, you know? So,
you know, kind of, like, not necessarily pack fillers, but those people were making legitimate livings, right? Like those riders?
That's right, and anyone could seem to get a pro deal back then. Yeah. Like, and it feels a bit like it's coming back around a bit now. There's a lot of people getting bikes and stuff. I don't know. But it was not as professional, that's for sure. Like, in the respect of training, like, I don't think you're going to be anywhere near the top 10 these days unless you're really fit. Fuck me, man. I never used to... Oh, I did a bit, but not a lot. You know what I mean? I used to get drunk the night before and still get a top 10.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, that's kind of where I want to go. Kind of the... Like, I've just labeled it, like, the natural talent versus the jocks. Like, you got Palmer, Rennie, Rat, whoever. Like, kind of those... The people that seem like they could do that. Just ride their bike because they're good at it.
Yeah.
And do well. Do you think that's possible anymore? Like, was Rat the last guy?
I was
like,
going to say to you, exactly.
Is Latwill kind of bridging the gap there?
Yeah, that's right. Not with the success of Rat, though, yet.
Right.
But, yeah, I always felt like Rat was almost the last... Like, for me, he was the last one. Like, he used to... I mean, when he did good that year, I think he was probably... He was in shape. I know that was one year he really trained. But a little bit, he didn't probably... I feel like Rat, like a lot of them, there are a lot of them out there that enjoy riding downhill and enjoy riding their bikes, but to be successful at downhill or spend 3 hours a day in the gym or whatever they do doesn't sit well with them. And that's their failing. So you sort of get the feeling that, you know, that it's hard to say, because would the riders at the top of downhill be even radder on their bikes if they didn't go to the gym? But they've made a decision that they want to be the top World Cup racers on the planet. And I think that's a different vibe to what some riders are looking for. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? It's like, and you've got to work it out how much you're willing to sacrifice and having fun on a bike to how much work you want to put in to be right at the very, very top. And I'd say these days, most of them put all the work in.
Yeah.
Really, like Phil and that, I don't know how much training he does, but yeah, he's probably not of the fitness of, say, G. Atherton, is he? Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, fair to say. So they can turn it. And like me, back then, on the right track, on the right day, yeah, you can do it. But you ain't going to do it all season long. You know, you can't perform on every track. That's the thing. And you see that now. I mean, like, if it's steep, there's a lot of riders that do really well. And then other races, they'll just be nowhere.
Yeah.
So in that respect, it hasn't changed. Yeah,
Do you prefer one style over the other? Like, do you wish there were more kind of rat boy stories, yeah, versus
I probably do, yeah. I like the underdogs, I suppose, that could just do it on of course. I've always been a fan of people like that, like the sort of the people on the fringe of what they're supposed to be, like McEnroe's, like, you know what
I mean?
Yeah,
kind of disruptors.
Yeah, these characters usually, they're a bit more characterful people like that. Yeah, yeah, I do miss that a bit. Yeah, I must admit, yeah, yeah. But that's the nature of the beast, isn't it? It's a very, very, very professional sport now, and that's that. And that's the same with sport across the board. It all seems to have gone like that. Like, look at Supercross and that, with McGraths and all that, and now look how these top guys are. I mean, they train like savages now. I mean, don't get me wrong, imagine McGrath and that were in shape, but I don't think they went to the gym like these guys do, did they? You know what I mean? Yeah, it's all moved on, isn't it?
Yep.
And if you want to be good and you want to make a living out of it, you've got to put the work in. That's that.
Yep. How do you explain performances like Danny at Champerie, or even Sam when he got third on that one rainy day, or, you know, Gwyn Chainless or Gwyn at Mount St. Anne last year? Like, you've been around it a long time. Yeah. Like, how... do you have any explanation for how that shit happens? Like, how those...
It's like, just hit. Like, Danny's run in Champerie was, wasn't it? I mean, won that, it was 11 seconds, wasn't it? Yeah. To win Worlds by 11. I do like the wet races in the fact that if there's enough traction in the ground, and if someone risks everything, and if they get away with it, it will be one of those runs, like you say, Gwyn last year, Steve Smith, of course, Mont St. Anne as well. St. Anne's good. St. Anne, when it's wet, actually, under it's quite a sandy soil, and there is, to a point, a fair, don't get me wrong, not all the way down, but there is a bit of traction there sometimes. And yeah, they do blow me away. It's like those days when I was racing that I'd live for, because you felt like in the start-up, when it's a shit track in front of you, all mud, you've got fuck all to lose. You might as well roll the dice. Chances are you'll crash like everyone else, but if you do get to the bottom, and if you like the brilliance of Danny or Gwyn or Smith, then you can put one of those runs together that will go down in history. And they do.
Yeah.
You know.
Do you...
How about Gwyn winning Val de Sole in the dry by 8 seconds?
Yeah,
that's
all those.
Absolutely savage as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there are standout runs all the time. And it must be just everything's perfect. Like, they had the perfect run, the bike, everything was good. And it probably all comes down... ultimately, to probably how they feel mentally, I would say, as well.
Yeah. Did Kvaerk win Fort William by like 12 or 13
14,
seconds?
Wasn't it, or something? Yeah.
Well, I don't know. The legend gets bigger and bigger.
Yeah, yeah. It's 25 seconds. I think that's the biggest winning margin, I believe, in a downhill World Cup by a man.
Okay, I've never taken the time to look it up, but I just like the legend.
Oh, well, yeah. Fucking nuts. He went through the woods, though, didn't he? Like, everyone was like getting off and walking. Apparently, he went through it like it was dry. Yeah. Yeah, Kvaerk. Yeah, of course. Glad you brought that up, actually. It would have been a travesty to have missed that one. Yeah.
Do you feel like there's something that the handful of consistent riders have that no one else can have? You know, like, you've got Gwyn or Greg, like, just these really consistent top three guys all the time.
I think their pace. For me, when I look at it, their pace just has to be a little bit quicker than everyone else. Because even on a... to be that consistently good all year, because even when a track might not be the best track or whatever, they're still right there.
Yeah.
So they're the complete package of fitness, of bike riding, of everything, aren't they? And they've got to be so strong mentally, I think. That would be the big thing. Like, if there was an uphill or a pedal of 10 seconds, count me out. But these dudes are like, they're savage animal winners, aren't they? They're winners, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah, do you think it is like that? Headspace, just this kind of wiring that they have that someone else might not ever have.
Well, Aaron, I don't know. He's just like he's just the most direct. He's just forceful and fast. Greg is like, I don't know. This is just my opinion, but he always appears to be so naturally gifted on a bike that it appears to come so easy to him. Like, he really does, doesn't it? He's so like. Beautiful, for probably want of a better word, to watch though on the bike. For me, he's so like easy style and looks like he's not moving. You know, Aaron's very, to me, always looks really aggressive. And then Danny is, you know, he's just, when he's on, he's almost untouchable, isn't he? He's just incredible.
Yeah.
Like, he seems to be willing to maybe take more risk. And when it happens, it really happens. Yeah. They're all exciting. That's what's so exciting about downhill. There's 7 races a year, and really, you don't know who's going to win them. Like, we've got a good idea, but like, it all comes down to that one run, and that's why I love it.
Yeah.
That's why it's so sick. All that pressure, man, and they And somehow they deliver those absolutely the best run of the weekend. It's quite often that finals run, or always is, you know. Yeah. Amazing, yeah.
Do you wish there were more races? As fans, we all do, but...
I'd like a few more, yeah. I mean, I don't think I'd want it to be like MotoGP where there's 20. I think each World Cup is an occasion, and you do look at them and think, right, it's a World Cup. I ain't going to miss that this weekend. That's how I am with it a bit. But I think if we had 10, 8, 10, it would be nicer.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. And why we don't, I don't know. It's nothing to do with me.
Yep.
But yeah, I think everyone would like a couple more rounds, probably.
Okay. Who are riders that you want to watch regardless of how they're going to perform out there? Ooh. Like when you're at a race, just like, I want to make sure I see X.
There's a few in there, really. Danny would always be one.
Yeah.
Gwyn, of course. I mean, they're the fast ones, though. You mean from further back in the pack that I'd like to watch?
Anyone.
I always like watching Brooke. He's always full on. You're always going to get something. I mean, I like the riders that are exciting.
Yeah.
And that sits well with commentary, of course.
Yeah, for sure.
You know.
Do you think it's one of those stories of they look fast, they look ragged, but the clock shows that they're a little back there?
That's right.
Those are always heartbreaking because I want the rowdy guys to be going the fastest.
That's right, and it don't always work out nowadays, does it? No, it never did back in the day, though, really, either, actually.
Same thing.
Well, we used to have two runs, was it, at World Cups? We definitely had two at Euros, and I remember...
Best of two? Not
combined. Yeah, we used to have best of two, whether it was at World Cup. Definitely at Eurochamp. I remember at Meta BA anyway, at Eurochamps there, I went mental. Like, I literally went mental. I was like, first roll, I got another one, I'm going to go mentally. And I nailed it, and I risked everything and went and rode like a fucking... No, hang on, other way round, excuse me. First run, I did a good, solid, fast run.
Mm.
Like, clean, but didn't take any risks. Second run, I remember I took my brain out. I was like, you've got a good one in the bag, you're in the top 10 or whatever, fucking just go skits.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was all revved up, like, barking in the start-up. And I was about 5 seconds slow, and it felt mint. So that was it. I knew then from that point on it didn't work. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, shame, innit?
Huh?
It's a shame.
Yeah.
You got to be exact.
Every once in a while it pays off, though, right?
Mm. Yeah, once in a while. That's right. I mean, them runs are the ones, isn't they? Yeah.
Yeah. Do you ever have to hold your tongue as a fan for someone, or do you feel like you can be... Like, that editorial doesn't really matter too much.
No, I would say I do, really.
Do
yeah,
you?
Yeah, 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 of course, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, not so much a fan of someone, just a fan of someone going fast. So I have to remember to not be a fan and not just start screaming and, oh, my God, oh, okay, you know, you've got to, people are at home are listening, so you've got to remember to be structured and keep it, yeah, yeah. But we do get loose towards the end if it's something wild. I mean, and also, you know, like, Red Bull have no problem when we go and berserk.
Yeah.
You know, if it's a run that deserves it, go for it. The trouble with Freecaster is I'd go berserk for 2 hours. So, yeah, you know, but we've left all that a long time behind us.
Are we going to get into kind of the structure of the 2018 season and how the racing works out?
Oh, my God.
What do you think about the top 60 and the protected rider changes this year? Like, you getting your head around it?
Yeah. Just out of let's be honest, just before we went on there, I was frantically phoning around trying to find out.
It was pretty awesome.
I was pretty close, though.
Yeah.
Like, I had it roughly. I wanted to get it right for the commentary, though, for this though. But so Whiteley came through. Do you want me to try and explain? The top 60 thing against 80, I don't mind that. It ain't going to make no difference to me. I only talk about the top 25. So,
okay.
You know, that probably disappoint riders that go and don't qualify now, of course, but... The sport's got to progress all the time, and everyone's trying to make it better. Remember that, like, no one's trying to make it shitter. So these things have to happen. But, and I do like the new protected rider rules because of what happened in Lourdes last year. You know what I mean? With the rain coming down and things like that. So now it's going to be a bit fairer. And yeah, can you tell that I'm like starting to blag for time here, looking for computers? Are you going to ask me exactly how to explain it now?
No, but you can. What? The sentence Martin sent was the best one.
He did. Yeah, thanks. Thank you, Martin, for saving my life here. I've got this big email in front of me, and I did know it roughly, but basically now, you're still going to have 20 protected riders in the final, but 10 of them are going to be the top 10 from the current World Cup standings, as well as the top 10 from last year's World Cup standings in that overall at the last round, they're protected as well. So they make up your 20 protected riders now. Now, the start order is quite complicated. And then you've got your qualifiers in there as well. But what it means is you'll have a more consistent top 20 that you will see most weeks, I guess, or a lot of the weeks now. And I don't think that can be a bad thing. We'll see. I mean, we'll see as the season unfolds if, you know, you start getting a random dude like who's qualified and wins the race, then that might be a bit tricky. But yeah, you're never going to please everyone with these rule changes.
Yeah,
that it's impossible. Yeah. So
I think it's cool they're trying to progress it and try things.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, I think it'll be a more rounded season for it, actually. Like, as in, yeah, it'd be good. I think you're going to see the top dudes every race now.
Yep.
To me, that can only be better, really.
Yep.
That's basically what it's done. It's more given us more of an assurance of you're going to see, the top 10 always. You're always going to see the top 10 riders from last year's World Cup. So that's good.
Yeah.
That's got to be good.
It's got to be exciting.
Yeah, you're going to see the top 10 in the overall standings from this year's World Cup.
And you're going to see the fast qualifiers.
They'll cross over. And then you're going to see, that's right, they'll cross over. A lot of those will be, so you could, in theory, if the top 10 from this year's World Cup overall match the top 10 from last year's overall, still have 15 spots for fastest qualifiers. Let's just leave this here. Fucking confusing myself, but I think that's about it. Yeah.
Have you ever been put in any awkward predicaments because of what you do, like with riders, with teams? Like, you sort of mentioned that, riders might, say, hey, you said something about me that didn't seem fair.
I've had a couple of people. I did have a little bit here and there.
Yeah?
Okay. I ain't saying any names.
Yeah, I'm not asking for that.
No, back in the day, not recently, no.
Okay.
Not really, no.
Got it.
No.
All right, so I ask every rider that I interview, a racer, who they hate being beaten by. And they rarely say, someone specific. They're like, oh, I just want to be on top. That's all I want. Is that answer bullshit? Do you think every rider has a rival? Did you have one?
Yeah. Massively, yeah.
Who?
Yeah, yeah. Petey. But go back a while here. Remember, by the time that 97 came around, 98 came around, he was long gone. But up until that point, I could, I had little ding dong.
Mix up with him, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And he probably knows. But, we're both British, and it was all about being the best British rider. And, of course, when Jace was alive as well, it was like that with him.
Yeah.
And it will be the same now. You want to be the first on your team. You want to be the first of your country, really. Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I used to... if I read a magazine and it was something I didn't like, it wouldn't take a lot to make my blood boil. I'd cut that out and take it to the race, and then I'd read it before the start just to fucking make me angry.
Really?
Shit. Yeah, of course. Yeah. I used to race on absolute. If I was going to do good, I'd usually be pretty angry. Yeah,
on aggression.
I'd need something, and it would. And very often it would be like to beat someone that had beat me the week before, or to beat Steve at the Nationals in the UK or something, and at World Cups really. Until in 97, when I had a good year, it was all about beating Steve, because he was, me and him were battling all summer. We were on the podiums at every World Cup almost, and it was, it's a bit weird, isn't it, really? Because they're one of your best mates as well, but sometimes you've got to fucking hate them to beat them. Yeah, I think that's how it is. That's how it was.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong now. No, these ain't so bothered about a fast time.
All right, so you read magazine clippings to get you kind of...
Well, ones that were negative about me something like
aggression.
That. Yeah.
So that's the thing. Do you keep track of any online comments about
what
you
said or how you do it?
No?
Really? No. No, I don't really. No. I used to, from Freecast, I used to read them and that. But not so much these days. No. I don't want to get involved in all that, really.
Yeah.
Claudio looks at the comments sometimes. I've told him, don't bother, mate. We're here doing a good job as far as we're concerned.
Yeah.
And you ain't going to please everyone. Everyone's got an opinion, and you don't know who these people are on a pink bike forum or whatever. They might. Sorry, am I allowed to say pink bike? I just looked at your hat.
No, we're done. Thank you, outro music. We're out.
Thank you. But yeah, you know what I mean? It was sorry, dude. This cushion's opened up.
No, I know. We're getting there.
No, I'm all right. I'm still chilling.
Okay, good.
Yeah. I don't know. Do people listen to the whole things? It's just been an hour, is it?
Yeah, dude, some of the longest ones have been the most commented on.
No way!
I'm blown away. I was always just if it's more than 45 minutes, forget it. But some have pushed 2 hours, and people get through everything. Yeah.
Good. Yep. Oh,
bunch of weirdos out there.
Keep boring everyone.
All right, so I want to kind of transition into like your celebrity now? Like, has the reach of your celebrity surprised you?
Celebrity, that's a big word.
Yeah, but do you feel like you have it? I do. Ah. And I'll use the example, which we talked about at breakfast, but like the Vital Raw and the 17 questions that we did with you, the views on that were bigger than a lot of the kind of heavy pro riders. Yeah. Yeah, like, is that surprising? Do you?
Yeah. Yeah, of course it is. Yeah. Yeah, it's good though. I'll take it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Why not? I mean, it's nice now that, well, although when I was racing, I didn't give a shit either, but I never really care what I say. That's a, you know, I don't particularly, well, I don't. I like to think I'm quite honest, really, I suppose. Yeah. I just sort of say it. And if it's, so why not? So, you know, I guess people might like that a bit. Because a lot of riders are quite closed, don't they, when you interview them? They can be good fun. And then you get them in front of a camera and it's like, and yeah. Like, you know, and they, it's hard to get sort of into them and like, tell me what you really think. You
yeah,
know?
And they're because all business. I mean,
they're
it's
all
kind
business.
Of thing,
that's but, exactly it. And you yeah. can't blame them. They're looking after sponsors and la, 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 la. But yeah. But that maybe that's what I got the edge then. I just don't give a fuck.
Yeah, I think that's cool. All right, so kind of on that subject, you know, you were on Giant, but then you're on Coleman Saul. Now you're on YT. Like, did they approach you as an influencer? Or are you going after them to, you know, to try and get stuff? Like,
so I was with Giant for, which I'd like to make this point as well. I don't switch brands very easily.
Yeah, no, I wasn't trying to imply that. No, I know you weren't.
Okay. But it was like, you know, so I rode for Giant from 96 until 2006. So yeah. I was with them for 20 years. And then they actually just didn't email me back when I emailed them about bike. I was getting just a couple of bikes off them by the end, which is all I need. And, you know, I want nice bikes because I want to look good in video. Not because they make me ride any better, but it's nice to have cool shit and look yeah. cool because of what I do when I go and do series for Red Bull and that. You know, I like Troy Lee gears, to me, by far the flashiest gear.
Yep.
I've now got the flashiest bike. I'm right where I need to be. And, and after Giant, I went to Common Cell. And that, really, I just got chatting to Max, who I've known forever and I like. And we did a video. And then it went from there. And then I rode for him. And then it was actually just a miscommunication, is probably the way to put it. I don't know if it was bad English or... But I run at a different pace to most people as well. And I didn't hear back from them on a few occasions for a while. And I was like, well, they don't really want me, then I'm going to go. So, I got hold of YT and they come through for me. And it was sick, yeah.
Yeah, but you're the one doing the reaching out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I don't think many people go after anyone my age to ride for them anymore. Yeah,
I don't know.
You know, I'm not on the high list of picks but no, and it was mint. And they came straight through and were like, yeah, and... you know, fucking, here you go. And I was really chuffed because I do really feel like I need to stay relevant these days, you know, because it's a youth sport and I ain't getting any younger. So, really nice to stay with probably, I would say, the most relevant brand at the moment, you know, and a sick brand and sick bike. So, fuck yeah, fucking cool. And I was a bit gutted about... Not really gutted, but I was annoyed that I'd done a lot of good stuff with Common Sail last year, and then it all just kind of went out the window, and I was like, oh, fucking hell. But I've got to deal with YT for the foreseeable future, so that's fantastic. And they're mint, mint is proper, yeah. So great, thank you to them.
Cool. What's the... well, actually, did you ever think you'd be a quote-unquote sponsored rider this late in your life? Did you ever think about that?
Right. I can't believe it, mate. I don't have to buy mountain bikes. It's fantastic. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I'm like, you know, I get the sickest bikes as well. Like, that's the thing. Yeah. I'm really lucky. That's how I feel. I feel fucking lucky that I've got a job that allows me to go and say, any chances of a bike? And they'll go, a lot of them will go, yeah. Yeah, you can have some bikes, yeah. It's fine. Yeah, it's mint, isn't it?
That's awesome.
Yeah, I love it. And I love it because I feel like I need to... Another big point why I make sure I still ride a lot is because I want to sort of stay in touch with what the riders are doing on the bikes on the track. So I ride as much as I can just so I still know what's going on. I don't want to become detached from what I'm watching, you know what I mean? I want to be doing it, if you know what I mean,
yeah.
to a point. You know, so that's another thing why I make sure I stay with bikes and keep going. And yeah, I enjoy mountain biking still.
Yeah.
Well, more now. Fuck me. You take me to Bike Park Wales, put me down a blue run, I'm as happy as a pig in shit. I am. Yeah, awesome. I don't want any bumps. I don't want anything gnarly. I just want to cruise about and have a good day out, and that's what I do with my mates. And so mountain biking's come back round for me like that, because I got sick of it when I was racing. Fuck, I hated it.
Yeah.
I hated everything about it, really, at some points, you know.
Damn, that's pretty cool. When did you and Petey and Claudio do the POV? Was that at Lenzerheide
together? No, we did one in Val d'Isola.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Would you ever do stuff like that again?
Yeah. I wouldn't want to do a World Cup track with all the big gaps, though. Yeah. So Val d'Isola was good because it was natural, but I did suck, but
it
was fucking out. The only time I could get on the track was six in the morning, and I borrowed George Brannigan's bike, which was I don't know what size it was, but oh my God, it was pretty small for me. I'm 6'5", and yeah, I wasn't even awake. I did well to do that first gap across that road, I thought. Yeah, I ain't got any quicker on mountain bikes. That's definite. Yeah. I'm only getting slower now.
Nice. Were you surprised by the... that's not the way... Did you think 29ers would have done better last year than they did? Were you surprised at how the wheel size debate sort of turned out? It seemed like it was equalized.
I think I was, actually. I thought they were going to come in and absolutely dominate on them, really. I thought they were going to be that much quicker. Yeah, I did. I mean, I've got this Capra 29 now, which is, fucking incredible. Until that point, though, I'd only ever had a Giant, which was a 100-mil travel cross-country thing. But from that, I knew that they were quicker or felt quicker. And then they roll quicker. And, yeah, I thought that, you know, like it was mad, wasn't it? It was like a scramble for every manufacturer to do a 29. And in the end, it was a 27.5 that came out on top. And would Aaron go any quicker on a 29? I'm not sure he would now. But at the start of last year, I'd have probably said, yeah, any rider would. But now, I probably wouldn't say that. I'd be like, no. And I think what I learnt last year was it might just come down to literally the size of the rider. Because Greg and Jack are brilliant on them. And then a lot of other riders who've got on them got off them as well.
Yep.
And they are different. I was surprised riding this Capra at the bike park in the week. How it does feel subtly different. Probably more of a difference than I thought. So I think you're going quicker for me, but you almost feel like you're going slower. It's all a bit mellower, but it's nice. I wouldn't go back. I get on a 29 and I'm on a bike that feels like it fits me.
Yeah.
That's the thing. The wheel size feels right. When I get on a 27.5, I always feel like that front wheel needs to be forwards a bit or bit. So I much prefer them. Yeah. Cool. They're great for me.
Cool.
But I ain't racing one.
What race are you looking forward to most and least this year?
Least. Am I allowed to bring the cross-country races in?
Yeah, if you want.
Oh, my God. So, Czech Republic, Novo Mesto, is one of the best races you'll ever go to, right? There's thousands and thousands and thousands of people turned up. The atmosphere, it's like a downhill. It's amazing. But the hotel, I ain't one to bitch about hotels. It's been bombed. Well, it's pretty bad.
Is that the only hotel in town?
Maybe for a big group like Red Bull, yeah. The worst, it's not that bad. Don't get me wrong, don't want to sound like a snob, right? But the fucking curtains are yellow, right? So you draw the curtains and they actually make it brighter. So at 5 in the morning, you wake up with a bloody suntan. I sleep in the toilet, mate. I take the mattress in the loo. In the tiny toilet.
Really?
Yeah,
on
my life.
Just to make it black?
Make it black as I wake up at 5 and then I'm bollocksed all day. Yeah, I can't do anything. So I sleep in the bog there, yeah. Yeah, that's the only one. That's my only gripe. My favourite. I always love going back to Mont St. Anne, really. Just because I've been going for so long and it's always a good one. Yeah.
Do you not feel like it's worn out?
No, I don't.
Okay.
No, I don't at all. No, I think the track stands up. It stands the test of time. Fuck me. It's one of the best races of the year. I love Mont St. Anne. I like the contrast of how fast it is, really fast and really spectacular to watch. And then they go straight in a fucking rock section at 10 mile an hour, 15 mile an hour, you know? I think Mont St. Anne's amazing still. Yeah, okay. I love it. Love that one.
You going to race Masters Worlds in 2019?
Are they at Mont St. Anne?
Yeah, I think.
Are they?
Well, there's World Champs there. I think everyone's assuming it'll be Masters is there too. But
yeah, right. I might actually.
Do it. Petey, is Petey going to race Masters
Worlds
ever?
I wouldn't have thought so.
Huh?
I don't know. Never say never, but I don't know, if I was him, I'd been real world champ. I don't know if I'd be bothering with Masters world champ. I don't know. You got a lot to lose, mate, and not much to gain at this point. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on the Croatia track from what you've seen? You haven't been there yet. Right?
No, but I watched, because the Specialized team went down there, didn't they?
Yeah.
And I watched that video and I thought, because I'd heard what everyone else had heard, that everyone was moaning about this massive pedal into the finish area that's supposed to be a minute long and flat.
Like the urban section?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then from what I gathered from what Finn and Loic and that said, and Miranda, that it looks like it's mint. Like they're on about, you're going to be breaking wheels and it might be a bit of a pedal at the end, but I don't think, someone said it's not as long as the pedal at the end of the Worlds track from Cairns. So until we get there, we won't know. But I think from what they, it seems like it's going to be mint. It's good. It's going to be a really hard kind of on the bike, on the, you know, track, you know, a rough, gnarly track. Yeah, it's going to be great. And fuck me, we're going to Croatia on an island. I ain't moaning.
Yeah, the scenery looks good. Like it finishes right near the water, I think. Yeah,
yeah, it ain't going to be terrible, is it? Yeah. No, no, I think it's... Yeah, let's have more races in Croatia on the beach.
Who's winning 2018 overall? Pick 'em. You got to say it.
Gwyn.
Okay, easy enough.
Yeah, pretty easy. Did you know...
You think he's got it again?
Well, if you're going to put... If you're going to look at it and mention someone, then it's got to be him, because... Because I'm going to see him to do that's why I'm over in Cali to do this shoot with him. So I looked at it, all the stats from a different thing. And since he first won the World Cup in 2011, he's only lost it twice. He started World Cup racing in 2008 in Mont St. Anne, so that's 10 years ago. He's won 5 of the series since. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So you're like, yeah, Gwyn. And in the women's is going to be really interesting, I think, between Rachel, Tani, Miriam and Tracy. And if you put me on the spot, well, it's going to be interesting. The big story is Rachel going to be able to win again?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we're all waiting to find out, because she was smashed up last year. She had a lot of surgery on her shoulders again, and she's had trouble with her shoulders. But I went and shot with her the other day, and you know, she's up for it, and she was riding brilliantly. And let's not forget that before she got hurt, she was way better than anyone.
Yeah,
unarguable. She'd won 13 or 14 World Cup races on the trot. So, yeah, she was. She had a margin. And has she still got that margin? Is that margin gone? We're going to find out.
Yeah.
It's going to be exciting. The women's racing is going to be good this year.
Yeah, it seems like
Tani's going to be hungry. Miriam's going to be defending. Tracy's wild fast. You know, Miranda, the world champ, what can she do? I mean, yeah, it'd be good. Yeah. Yeah, I think it'll be good. I've enjoyed the women's racing in recent years more and more, actually.
Yeah,
it's got better. It's come back up. When I was racing, it was all like Lee Donover and Missy and Alka Brutsart and fuck knows, there's hundreds of them that could win. And then it thinned out, but now it feels like it's actually coming back up to be a decent competitive field again.
Yeah, do you feel like Rachel's domination kind of took the spark away? And not that I'm not blaming Rachel.
No, exactly. She's out there winning.
But, you know what I mean? But it's kind of like, okay, Rachel's going to win.
Yeah, it did get a bit like that. It was quite hard commentating on it.
Yeah.
She's 20 seconds up, or, you know, every week.
Yeah.
You know, and actually, me and Claudio, I'll admit, we ran out of bloody things to say all the time, you know.
Yeah, when she's won that many.
Yeah, we did a bit, you know. Yeah, we did a bit, of course. So, I don't know, but this, I'm definitely looking forward to this year more than I have another season for a long time. For the women's racing, I think, you know, it's going to be good, yeah. I'm very interested to see it unfold, yeah. And it's good, man, because you might have two Brits at the top battling.
that's why always, you care.
Well, it's always, you know, like I said, someone always want to be the best Brit, man. So
have
it's
a
gonna
Frenchie
be,
disturb it.
It's going to be good to see how that unfolds as the season goes, yeah, for definite.
All right, what's UNT?
UNT, my t-shirt company.
Yeah, what is it?
United Nation of Troublemakers. I had to rebrand it quite heavily.
What?
Because it does say a bad word, really.
Yeah, there's a copyright symbol
at
the end.
Yeah, that's it, really.
What is it? What?
I did it in the 90s as a, I don't know, just a, like riders now. You ain't cool unless you got your own clothing brand, man. 50-1 or whatever, you know what I mean? Or S4P. So, yeah, I've done that one. I was just bored at Christmas. So between September and like March, I think I made £1,500. I didn't do anything. I was really bored and probably running out of money. So I decided to relaunch the t-shirts. Yeah, I made a few grand out of it.
That's
yeah,
sick.
It was all right. Yeah. I did it for fun. It's fun. And I'm going to keep it going now. I'm quite enjoying it. Yeah. So There's a few go every week now. So yeah. It's starting to trickle out. Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
Cool. How do we find out about it?
You can go to unt.bigcartel.com and you'll find them all. Thanks for that, dude. Boy, I'm going to give Spymer a nux for that.
Seriously, he sent me to.
He just let me have a fucking advert on there. Yeah,
every podcast has that, right?
Did I? I don't know. Did I? Yeah. Good, thanks.
Do you call it UNT or do you call it UNT?
I call it UNT. Which technically isn't swearing, so we're fine.
All right, tell us something about you that most people wouldn't know.
Oh, no.
That you want them to know. They wouldn't feel too bad if they knew.
I've got something, but I probably ain't going to say it here.
Like crocheting, you know, like...
No, that's a good one, that is.
It's not an easy one, so...
No, I'm very interested in astrophysics.
Really?
Yeah. I quite like all that stuff, yeah, about the planets and stuff like that, yeah. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Brian Cox, you know who he is?
No,
he worked, yeah. And actually, a mate of mine works on the Hadron Collider. He fucking hates it.
My old college roommate worked over
no
there.
No way! Yeah. Dude, is he like, is it mental when you get chatting to him?
Oh, yeah, we can't even, he's dumbing it down as hard as he can.
I do my mates nutting about it. I'm like, you what? Have you found it yet? The elusive, what was it they were looking for? That
quark, the boson Einstein.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It's a big ring, isn't it, under Geneva and that. It's mental, isn't it?
Yeah,
cool. He works on that. So, no, I do find all that stuff quite interesting and that. And yeah, but that's about it, probably.
Okay.
I bought a fucking expensive telescope, let's put it that way.
No way, really?
Yeah.
Is there good light where you live? Like you can...
Well, I'm in the middle of nowhere, so it's black at night. Yeah. And I bought one where you can pretty much tell it what to find once you've set it up.
No way.
Yeah, and it's sick. And then you're a bit stuffed with a telescope because obviously everything's moving. So you're always fiddling with it. But this one auto-tracks. So once you've locked it on a Saturn, it'll fucking go with it and it's mint, yeah. Huh. Yeah, I've even bought some camera gear to try and sort it out. Fuck me, though, dude. You need to be a rocket scientist to work out how to use this camera I've bought. Down the lens, and I ain't got a clue. It's like 500 quid down the Swanee. I can't even get it to recognise there's a camera plugged in.
Yeah.
But, like, I do like that, yeah.
Yeah. And what's the coolest thing you've seen on the telescope?
Well, you see, what's it called when they're close? There's a name when those planets are close. They're in something or other. But when they're at their closest to the Earth...
Okay.
Which where their orbit is. I saw Saturn this year. Mm-hmm. That was amazing. And I saw Jupiter when it was at its closest.
Wow. Could you see the spot, like through your telescope?
Fuck me.
You could?
You can see the fucking spot. And you can see the three moons. Is it three or four moons on the side of it? I saw it.
Really?
And honestly, this is why I remember. I've always had a bit of an interest in it.
Yeah.
But when I looked down that eye thing, it took my breath away. Hmm. But I was looking at something that far away. And I could see the colours and... Oh, yeah, it's pretty sick, mate. Yeah,
that's rad.
Yeah, it is sick.
Like,
yeah.
When you say expensive telescope, you're talking downhill bike expensive?
No, okay. Like 800 quid.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's still a lot of money for a telescope, but I thought, fuck it.
Dude, you could see the spot in the moon
Jupiter? Yeah.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah, you can see that with a telescope easily, yeah.
Can you see the Milky Way just at night at your house?
Well, we're part of the Milky Way, aren't we?
I guess, but like when...
When you look up and there's like the big like line of stars up...
Yeah, that's what I understand. We're
I've
in
not
the
really
Milky
found
Way,
any of the smaller clusters of galaxies and all that, you know, like either.
Like when you're in Utah, like when you go out for Rampage and you go out at night and you can just see the...
I'd imagine that's a bit better than Henley on Thames.
Okay.
But no. I haven't seen it like you see it in photos, you know, where it's like, I can see it, but I've not bothered delving into it with a telescope. Okay. I'm all about the planets at the moment.
Yeah.
I'm working my way through the planets. Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
That's super cool.
Yeah. Yeah, have you heard of Beetle Guys? It's where they got the name Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that might explode soon. And then we'll have two moons. Did you know that?
No.
We'll have a daylight moon. Yeah, if it explodes into a supernova.
Come on, go in to explain that.
It is. Oh, my God, mate. If there's any astro... Anyone out there who knows anything about it, they're going to tear me apart. But basically, when a star collapses, it starts to collapse, right? And as it collapses and gets smaller, the pressure builds and the nuclear fusion and it starts up again. So then they grow again, right? Yeah. And this fucker, Beetlejuice, has been doing that for years.
Hmm.
Like, so it shrinks, and then it starts to fire it up again. I guess the pressure.
Like white dwarf to red giant.
That's
like that
right.
Whole
well,
thing?
It is. That's exactly. Yeah. And now it's the same size as the distance between Earth and the Sun.
Shut up.
Yeah, it's massive.
Really? It's 93.1
and
million miles. That's the one Saturn.
They guarantee it'll blow in the next 100,000 years or something. So keep an eye on it. Yeah. And when it does, we'll have two moons. I did like that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's sick. It'll be like Star Wars.
Yeah. Exactly. I sat next to the bloke, read three out of Star Wars on a plane.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you met famous people in your travels? Like, who's one of the coolest people you've... Or, I don't know, most interesting people you've come across with what you do.
Well, I probably did his nut in for 12 hours on a flight to fucking... He was going to a sci-fi convention in Rio, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And I sat and chatted to him about Star Wars all the way. Yeah, it was amazing.
Cool.
Yeah, that's amazing.
You do a lot of non-mountain bike commentary, right? I mean, do you do a lot? Like, what's one of the cooler...
I don't do a lot. No, I've done a few weird things. I did a ski event in Verbier.
Yeah.
Like this Verbier Extreme Festival thing, which I knew nothing about. But that was sick to see what them fucking lot do. They're mental.
Yeah. Are you able to pull it off if you don't know about the sport that well? Like, is there enough riding?
I would say I wouldn't pull it off as well as I do mountain biking. but yeah, you do your research, and what you need is a good geezer with you.
Yeah.
If you've got a good geezer with you, then you're laughing because you can just ask them questions. Mm-hmm. But you do also need to have a general understanding and things like names and that. You know, obviously being, you know, just pluck these names out, and that's the bit that probably I struggle with a bit more. But
sure.
Yeah, no, okay. I've done a few things. I did a lot of motorbike enduro, like the Super Enduro series one winter,
mm-hmm.
and I love that. I love that, and I do trials. I do the motorcycle trials now, the Trial GP series.
Oh, cool.
And that now, see now, this is sorry everyone, but I met Thierry Michaud and had a coffee with him.
I was going to say, are these like childhood heroes kind of thing?
Oh my God, one of the greatest moments in my life. And me and Andre last night were talking about Bernie Schreiber. Anyone know who Bernie Schreiber is? 1979 Trials Motorcycle World Champion. The first ever American to win an FIM World Championship. Fucking ledge.
There you go,
everyone. You just lost everyone who was listening.
That's all right. I think I have one more question left anyway. Tell us a safe secret about Petey that he wouldn't want us to know.
Oh my God.
We'll wrap it up with that.
Oh my God. I don't know about that. He's, well, I probably can say, I don't know if he's got a funny shaped head. Because when we all had haircuts on Palmer's bus, he was desperate to get involved, but he said he couldn't because he had a weird shaped head. And then someone took a clipper to the back of his head. And like buzzed it up.
Yeah.
So he was fucked. And then he had to go for it a bit more and fuck me. Even if I look at a photo of it now, I'll be on the floor crying. It's like the
Darth
pineapple.
Vader when the helmet comes off Darth Vader.
Yeah. It's like the pineapple, man. Like, I don't know why. Yeah, you'd have to see it. It's funny. That's it. He won't speak to me again for a while again now. Yeah.
All right. I ask this once in a while and it usually bombs, but is there anything you want to talk about that hasn't been asked?
No.
Maybe
next year.
Astrophysics.
Yeah. No, not really. No, I can't think of anything. No, I'm pretty good, really.
Who's going to show up on a 29er that we don't know will? Give some predictions.
Huh. Well, I don't know.
I've heard a couple, but...
I heard. You could tell me. I'm most curious about whether Aaron's going to be on one, really.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he will, really. I don't know. I mean... I don't know, he didn't seem very bothered last year, and if you're winning like that, I don't know why you... I suppose you try everything to be faster, right? But yeah, who do you know then?
I'm wondering if Loic or the Specialized team's going to.
I'm
curious
So. Bruni hates the 29s, doesn't he?
He hates them,
Even though his Instagram handle is LoicBruni29. What's that about, Loic? Huh? Jesus Christ. He hates them, but I'll use it for my title, yeah.
Predicted the future.
No, he'd be good to watch this year.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm not, but do you know what? This time last year, the wheel size thing was everything. And now, I think it's not nothing, but we're here to watch a mountain bike race. Who cares what size wheels they're on? Because we found out last year that it's not the be-all and end-all. You can win on both. Yeah. And it suits riders, like I said, I think big riders, and that's that, really. It might just come down to that, but yeah, we've got another season of mountain bike racing coming up.
We do.
Yeah.
And with that... wrap it up.
Thanks for having me on, mate. It's been a right laugh.
Thank you. It's been awesome. It's as good in person as it is on the webcast.
Thanks, dude. Nice one.
Thanks for tuning in to Vital MTB's The Inside Line podcast. Episodes drop every other Wednesday. Thanks to Jensen USA and Maxxis Tires for the support. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Vital MTB.